If you speak the truth, have a foot in the stirrup.
Hello, and welcome to another installment of the Sea Realm Podcast. I'm your host, KMO, and this is episode number 544, Jaloja, prepared for release onto the World Wide Web on Sunday, May 12th, 2019. Happy Mother's Day. In this episode of the podcast, what you're going to hear is most of what went out over the airwaves today on Sea Realm Radio. The call-in guest was JP of Egotastic Funtime. JP has been on the radio show and here on the podcast before, but in case you don't remember, he is a comedian and a YouTuber and a generally fun person to talk to and to listen to, even if you're not in a position to talk back. JP really loves the Orville, as do I, and he loves the idea of Star Trek, if not the actual reality of Star Trek Discovery. We'll talk about both of those shows, the good and the bad, but JP is really good at erring on the side of positivity, which I admire. So more good than bad is what you'll hear in the next hour. And rather than try to tee it up any further, let's just get right into my conversation with JP.
You're listening to the Sea Realm Podcast. C stands for consciousness.
All right, I'm joined, as promised, by JP of Egotastic Funtime.
Time.
We're here to talk about Season 2 of The Orville and Season 2 of Star Trek Discovery and whatever else comes up. Maybe we should actually start with The Orville, because there's big news. You want to give the big news?
Big news is we are The Orville, my friends. Yesterday afternoon, 1 hour after I put out a video, could it have been officially announced that The Orville was renewed for Season 3? It was kind of like speculative, like because Entertainment Weekly kind of announced it a little bit in one little line of text in one of their canceled, not canceled stories the night before. And I was like, does this mean that it is renewed, or are they just speculating, or did they get their information, their wires crossed? And then I put out the video. I finally got it up. It was a car time video for you to have a fun time where I'm in my car talking to people. And I announced, is this true? Is it actually renewed? 1 hour later, it was officially put up, officially announced by all the websites as well as the official Orville page that, yes, they have officially been renewed as of yesterday afternoon for their third season. And we could not be more excited about the news.
Yay!
Yay!
Merriment ensued. I can't imagine this is bad news for anybody in the entire world, actually.
No, it can't be. It's good news for at least people that watch the show and people that like utopian vision of the future, a fun sci-fi show that also touches your heart but also touches your brain. And we have a good fun time along the way. It's great news. It's great news for everyone. Even if people don't watch the show, they're not going to hate the fact that it's getting renewed for the third season.
Now, what's kind of curious is how is it that Fox waited so long to renew the show? It's very popular. It's critically well received. I mean, it's firing on all cylinders. Well, why not renew it immediately?
Yeah, well, I think there was just a lot of stuff going on business-wise, which is always fun to talk about. I think Fox wanted the show to be renewed. The cast, the crew, Seth MacFarlane, of course, wants the show renewed. The writers, they're all wonderful people. But I think there's just the business side of things you have to work out. If it's renewed, what's the budget going to be? There's the new Fox-Disney merger that just happened a month or so ago. That had to be considered, make sure Disney's, not going to have, be heavy-handed with the show or, see what Disney thinks about the show. And, Seth MacFarlane's contract with Fox is up this June, which means he could become a free agent if he wasn't happy with his renegotiated contract. Now, of course, just because his contract is up in June doesn't mean they couldn't have renegotiated it now. So that's probably what they were waiting for, to make sure everybody was happy with the terms, both sides. Fox, Disney, Seth, production. I think that's just all that, that was the holdup. But, of course, they can't tell us that's what the holdup is. They have to keep it all close to the vest. But it's great, though, because then we get, the anticipation just builds and builds and builds. And the anticipation, I'll tell you right now, not just with me, but all the fandom, which, I'm connected to the whole fandom, which is a big fandom, and it's a very loving, supportive, excited fandom. We were all, on pins and needles because we thought they would have announced it well before the season finale, which was 2 weeks ago. But they finally announced it yesterday, and I didn't even expect that to come. I thought if we were going to get an announcement soon, we might possibly get it, if we're lucky, this Monday at the Fox Upfronts in New York, where Fox, that's their day for the Upfronts, and the Upfronts is when all the different television stations, the networks, they come together. And they put on big presentations and parties for advertisers, hoping to entice the advertisers to buy blocks and blocks of commercials for their upcoming television season. So I thought that might be a great day for them to announce things. But they did it 2 days before. They announced season 3. And I think we are going to get another announcement this Monday. I hope that we'll be getting an announcement of when the premiere date for season 3 is going to be.
Well, the last time we talked, it was just before the beginning of season 2 of both the Orville and Star Trek Discovery. So let's just talk about the Orville season 2. I know you loved it, but say exactly how much you loved it and why.
I loved it 3,000. it was an incredible season. We got 14 episodes, technically 13 episodes, but one of the episodes, episode 2, Primal Urges, was a carryover from season 1. They weren't able to get the effects finished back in season 1, so they had to delay it and put it out in season 2. Absolutely adored season 2. It was everything season 1 was, but bigger, better, even more thoughtful, more impressive, broke some records in certain areas. But what my favorite thing about season 2 is the world building and the character building. The show is very, very focused, at least in season 2, was very focused on getting us to understand, fall in love, and get to know all the characters on the show that much better, just so that when anything crazy did happen, there's a planet's going to explode or the fate of all sentient life in the galaxy is at risk of being annihilated, we care that much more. And it really, really did work.
Oh, yeah. Some of my favorite moments and situations from season 2 involved Bordas, which is good because there was a whole lot of Bordas.
There was a lot of Bordas, and I agree. I agree with you. I love the Bordas stuff. One critique, and I totally understand this critique from some of the fans who are still fans of the show. They're like, wow, this show is very Mocklin. The season was very Mocklin and Bordas heavy. And I'm like, well, yes, but also not really, because a lot of times the Bordas stuff was like a B plot, a secondary story, or just some comic relief going on. But also I think the reason a lot of people say that is because the first episode, Jaloja, was a Bordas episode, right? It was all about the great release for a Mocklin, which is a very important time in a Mocklin's life. It's bigger than a birthday. So we had the great release. It was a big Bordas episode. But then the very next episode was Primal Urges, which was also a Bordas episode, a lovely, incredible episode. Not necessarily the most family-friendly episode, but that's fine with me.
This is the one where Bordas, we learned Bordas is a porn addict, basically. But
yeah, but they took it seriously as an addiction, which was, it was hilarious to watch the scenarios, but really the show took it seriously that he was addicted to this because of almost like because it was a coping mechanism from the season 1 storyline about a girl where, there was his son, Topa, was actually born female, but it's Mocklin custom to change their gender to male, and he did not want that to happen. So, but he was forced to make it have it happen. So that was a coping mechanism. So even though it was hilarious, they treated it as if it was an addiction, which it is. And that's actually something that's socially relevant today. But that episode was actually supposed to appear as episode 12 in the previous season, in season one, but they had to move it to season two because they just could not get the effects ready, because there was this great storyline about a planet about to, explode because it was being pulled into the sun of their solar system. It's great stuff. They had to save some people on there. It was beautifully done effects-wise. So they couldn't get it done in time, so it was moved. Now, unfortunately, because the look of season two changes, the uniforms change within just a couple episodes, but everything they filmed in season one for that episode looks like season one. They had no choice but to place that episode as episode two, right after the Geloja episode. So that is why you had two Bordas episodes in a row. I don't think they wanted to do that, but they had no other choice.
So I can't imagine that anybody who doesn't watch The Orville is still listening to this radio show right now. But I suppose I can imagine that somebody has fallen and they're injured and they can't get up and they're waiting for help to arrive and the radio is on and they just don't know what we're talking about. So Bordas...
Okay. Just stay with us. Listen to the sound of our voices. Help is on the way.
Yeah.
But we're going to keep you company.
Right. But just so you can follow our conversation, we're talking about The Orville, which is, I would say, it's an answer to Star Trek. It is, people have described it as Seth MacFarlane. He's the creator. It's his love letter to Star Trek. And we have a character named Bordas who, at first glance, like when I first saw the first commercial for the Orville, I just saw, okay, this is the Orville's version of the Klingons, which is, at a very, very superficial level, it's applicable. But as soon as you get below the surface, we learn some very, very interesting things about, the Mocklins. That is not true of Klingons. Like, supposedly, they're all male. What? It's kind of like a throwaway joke at first. Mocklins, they only pee once a year, and because they're all male, they don't have to worry about who puts the toilet seat up or down. It seems like a throwaway when they first introduce him, but it's not anything. It's not a throwaway. I mean, that's their go-to sort of touchstone for gender politics issues. They go to Mocklin.
Absolutely. Gender politics issues, also sexuality issues, and there's a lot of silliness that goes on with the Mocklins, even though they're a very stern, very stoic type of race, angry, it seems at times, just like the Klingons were. It's very different. They kind of have that a little bit of a classic Klingon look, minus the hair, kind of that Worf, Michael Dorn sternness that Bordas has. But they're very different. When you go deep down, there's like, oh no, they got a whole other thing going on. That was just very surface level. But also the single gendered race thing, their entire race is male. But it turns out, and they keep uncovering a little bit more and more, that's actually some sort of conspiracy going on. And I think in season three, we're going to uncover that there is, just like in this season, we find out that there are a lot more female Mocklins born than the Mocklin government reveals. And I think that's going to be blown wide open in season three, and we'll finally get a follow-up to that. But I think that's all part of, and I appreciate it, it's all part of the world building that the Orville is doing. It is building a universe and building a world. And it's a world that people, the fans, want to be a part of. They want to just hang out in the Orville universe with these people, the crew, in the 25th century. And I think that's what's really important about the show and why it's been so successful with the fandom. And this is the fastest growing fandom I've ever seen. And I've been a part of a lot of fandoms over the last many decades. And I still am part of a lot of different fandoms. But this has been the most supportive, most loving, most happy, most positive fandom and fastest growing fandom I have ever seen.
I'm glad to be a part of it, and I'm glad you are more than just a part of it. You're a representative, a cheerleader for it.
Yeah, I guess I am. I need to go get some Orville pom-poms.
Absolutely, you do. I can visualize it. You know, one of the images that I just loved from this season was when Gordon talked Bordas into growing a mustache, or, you know, having one applied.
Yeah, that's just one of the things. You know, no matter what's going on in an episode, no matter how serious the situation is, and the show does get very serious, very dark sometimes. Just like Star Trek used to do, but then, you know, they can also have this light moment or light moments going on throughout a storyline. So, no, you know, you have a serious situation going on, but also Bordas decided to grow a mustache. So Dr. Claire stimulated his follicles because Mocklins can't grow hair. They don't grow hair at all. They're all bald. And so she used her, you know, 25th century medical kit to stimulate the follicles over his lip. In a couple hours, he had a nice, thick, Tom Selleck mustache. And actually, I wish they kept it because it looked pretty dang good.
And part of the great humor that comes out of the Mocklins and Bordas in particular is that they are so stern. So, you know, he wanted this mustache because he was told it would look good. And once he's got it, you know, it does look good, but it also looks absurd. But he doesn't get the absurdity. So he's just, you know, walking around serious as always, but serious with a serious mustache.
Yeah, he's taking the mustache seriously, which is why it is so hilarious. Some of the best humor, not just on the Orville, but anywhere, is when you have a ridiculous situation, but they're treating it seriously.
Yeah.
And that just elevates the humor. Elevates it 3,000.
Do you want to unpack the 3,000 reference?
Oh, the 3,000 reference. Well, unless you're living in a cave, actually, I think even people in caves have seen Avengers Endgame by now. But, of course, 3,000 comes from Tony Stark and his child. Spoiler alert, this little conversation they had, and he's like, I love you. And she's like, I love you 3,000. And, you know, it was a little moment that they had, and he was bragging to Miss Potts. Was her name Penny Potts? Is it Penny Potts?
Pepper. Pepper Potts.
Pepper, that's right. Pepper Potts. That, you know, she loves him 3,000. She might love her maybe 600 or something like that. So it's just a fun little cute thing that I've decided to take on, make it my own. That's my word now.
That and Jaloja.
Yeah, that and Jaloja. Jaloja is now a huge thing in the Orville fandom community. It's we all greet each other with Jaloja. Now, in the episode, the season premiere, which is called Jaloja, Jaloja is, for those of you who might not know, it is the ceremony of when a Mocklin has, you know, the Mocklins only urinate once a year. So when they urinate, it's called Jaloja. It's called the Great Release. So, you know, in Star Trek, everybody would say kapla, because the Klingons would have the greeting, you know, kapla.
Which means success.
The word Jaloja, which basically means urination, because it's such a great term, it's such a great word, such a great phrase, and we've taken it and we use it as a greeting. So we're always saying, Jaloja! But I remember when that episode aired, afterwards everyone was telling me that when they go to the restroom now, they always yell out, Jaloja, before they use the restroom.
Well, we'll have to get off the Mocklins here in a minute because we're 20 minutes into this thing and we got a lot of ground to cover. But
well, the Mocklin heavy season.
It sure was. Now, just a few episodes later, we get a cigarette. The concept of the cigarette is introduced into the Orville, and Bordas, you know, our Mocklin, he has his husband and child live with him on the ship, and the husband, played by Chad Coleman, I just love. But what's the husband's name?
Clyden.
Clyden and Bordas both get instantly addicted to cigarettes, and we get a lot of the same humor that we got with the mustache, of just Bordas with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, just doing his job and looking serious.
Yeah, because they took it seriously. And it's because in the 25th century, nobody smoked cigarettes. It was a foreign concept. But they found a time capsule from 2019, they opened it up. There's all these artifacts in there. There's cell phones. There's the Yankees cap. There's, I don't know, there's all bubble gum, all kinds of stuff. But there was also a pack of cigarettes. And this episode had a guest star in it from Star Trek, Tim Russ, who played Tuvok on Voyager, one of my favorite Vulcans. And so they've had this pack of cigarettes, and Bordas smells it. He goes, what are these? And they're like, oh, these are cigarettes. And they say, oh, people used to light them and inhale them. And he's like, oh, they have a very interesting aroma. And it's because his alien biology is the Machlin biology is susceptible to instantly being addicted to nicotine. And, of course, they would never know that because there's no such thing as nicotine on Machlis. They've never been exposed to it before. So he goes into his quarters with Clyden, and they go to the resynthesizer, a.k.a. the replicator, and he says, one cigarette. And so they're both looking at the cigarette, and Clyden's like, oh, it smells wonderful. And then Clyden eats it because he's like, I'm curious to taste it. So instantly right there, Clyden's got to be addicted. And then Bordas is like, no, you're supposed to light them. And this was a great scene, a great piece of comedy. I don't know who came up with this little bit. They replicate two more cigarettes, and they both pick them up, put them in their mouth, and they use a phaser to light the ends of them, which is a cool, awesome move, and they wouldn't even know that. But they instantly get addicted to smoking cigarettes, and they replicate 500 cigarettes right then and there. But the part, and it was hilarious, but the part that made me actually scream out loud, and I was watching this episode by myself, like I watch all the episodes, and I actually screamed out loud when the commander, when Kelly comes onto the bridge and Bordas is in charge, he's the lieutenant commander, he's sitting in the captain's chair, he's taking care of the bridge. She walks in and he's got an ashtray and he's smoking a cigarette. It's just dangling from his mouth and he's just doing his job working. That's something you don't even see on TV anymore.
Yeah,
and then
that's
all of a
true.
You're seeing it in a 25th century utopian sci-fi show.
I suppose we should move over and talk a little bit about Star Trek. But before we do, let's stick with the good times.
Yeah, we got to manage our time.
Yes, The Orville, Season 2, not Bordas.
Yes, the really big thing, there was actually a couple of really big things, but the big game changer this season was their first two-part event, which was a two-part storyline called Identity Part 1 and Part 2, where the first half, which was written great, just a great sci-fi story, Part 1, written by Andre Bormanis, who wrote one of the most famous Star Trek episodes out there. I believe he wrote it, Darmok.
Oh, yeah.
Which was one of everyone's favorite Next Generation episodes. So it was a great sci-fi episode where we go off. We have a Kalon emissary on the ship named Isaac. He's basically an artificial life form. And he's been our friend the whole time. He's there to study humanity, to see if his people, his other artificial, people, artificial life form people want to join the Union. Turns out he's been a spy the entire time, just feeding information to the Kalon so they can decide whether or not they want to join the Union or destroy the Union.
Now,
go ahead.
Well, did he know that he was a spy, or was he more of a sleeper agent?
He wasn't a sleeper agent, but he didn't know that. I don't think he knew the Kalon have decided that they're going to try to destroy all sentient life. I think he was just giving them the information, which was pretty much his job anyway, to understand humanity and give them the information. No matter what you're doing, no matter what the reason you're doing it, it's still the same job either way, whether it's for good reasons or for bad reasons. And it was up to Kalon Primary, the leader of his planet, to make the decision. He was just there to give the information. And I think he was trying to give the information in a way that it was, not only truthful, but in a positive light, right? Because he formed a great relationship with Dr. Claire's children, the boys, Ty and Marcus, the Finn boys. I think he knew what he was doing. It turns out that the Kalon completely committed genocide of their creators. So there's like millions and billions of dead bodies under the ground on their planet from that used to be their creators. They destroyed all of their creators, which are, humanoid, actually living creatures, living people. and that was unveiled. But Isaac knew about that history the entire time. He was created after the big genocide, but he was aware of it, so he knew what was going on.
You know, they were kind of like the original Cylons in that respect. In the original Battlestar Galactica, humans didn't build the Cylons. It was an alien, a reptilian race that had built the robot Cylons, and the robot Cylons had killed them. And, you know, were then sort of roaming the galaxy and making trouble for humans. But
definitely an homage. Cylon, Kalon.
Yeah.
Definitely an homage.
So those, that two-parter was probably, I mean, to say that it was the low point of the season for me was, you know, that's misleading because it was great. But it's not the stuff that I really like about the Orville. You know, it's not the big special effects spectacular, you know, space battle with explosions and everything. I like the humor and I like the character building. And like you said, the world building. So this definitely did do some world building. A criticism of the original Star Trek, you know, with Kirk and Spock and all, is that no episode references any other episode. They're all just freestanding. They don't really flow. There is no larger narrative arc that's, you know, larger than a particular episode other than the Menagerie.
Yeah, correct. And but that was just the style of the time.
Right.
It was just the style. The thing that connected all the episodes together was the crew and their relationships to each other.
Which the Orville does great. I mean, the Orville carries that tradition on brilliantly. But they're also doing like the Next Generation did. You know, you have an ongoing, a larger story that stands outside of any particular episode.
Every episode, like with, you know, 90s Star Trek and then also the Orville, it's the same type of formula where every episode is a different story, but sometimes it will make callbacks to a previous story. So it's like little mini arcs that, you know, you have individual stories, but you also have the little mini arcs, which I very much like. I like that a lot more than just having an entire season be one arc, like, you know, like watching a 14-hour movie.
Right.
Because eventually you just get sick of that one story.
Well, you know, hopefully you like the story, but yeah, if you don't, you're probably going to tune out. Well, it is now 12:30 p.m. on the East Coast here. We are halfway done. You are listening to Sea Realm Radio on WOOL-FM, 91.5 Bellows Falls, Vermont. I'm KMO, and I'm talking with JP of Egotastic Fun Time, and we've been talking about the Orville, a show we absolutely love. And you can't really talk about the Orville without talking about Star Trek Discovery. The actual official owner of the Trek IP is the CBS, at least for television, is the CBS Corporation. And they have a different vision for Star Trek than Seth MacFarlane has. I'll stop talking there because I'll go dark quickly, and I think you'll be better at keeping things positive.
Well, I try. Sometimes I slip, but then I try to bring myself back. Yes, CBS now owns the IP for Star Trek. I think they obtained it a year or two before they ended up canceling Star Trek Enterprise. So, like, CBS's first experience with Star Trek is them canceling Star Trek, which was really sad. But then they decided, you know, all these years later, they want to do their streaming service, and we own Star Trek, so let's do something with Star Trek. They have a very different vision for Star Trek. A lot of people feel that Star Trek Discovery isn't Star Trek, isn't like real Star Trek, even though it is officially, they have the license. They can call it what they want. It's strange because to me, like, a lot of people are like, well, they wanted to do something different with Star Trek. But to me, I'm like, well, it's not that they wanted to do something different. They wanted to do something the same that, you know, that all the other sci-fi shows are doing. All the other sci-fi shows are usually dark, gritty, one long story arc across, you know, across an entire season, you know, action, you know, backstabbing, all that stuff. They wanted to bring that to Star Trek, not because they wanted to be different, but because they wanted to be the same as what everyone else was doing, which works for all those other franchises, in my opinion. It works for all those other franchises, Battlestar Galactica, you know, shows like that, but Star Trek is different, and everybody knows Star Trek is different. So to not see that hopeful vision of the future to see it look so different. And, you know, the whole point of Star Trek, the number one rule is that humanity has put its differences aside and they're working together. To have that completely just go out the window was a real turnoff for a lot of people, especially with season one. But season two of Star Trek Discovery, you can tell that they see that people are not happy with that, and they've been making improvements the entire time. So far with season two, there was a lot of stuff I liked, a lot of stuff I didn't care for. It's not for me, but I can see that they're trying to work on it. I don't think they were completely successful in season two, not for me personally, but I think that they have learned a lesson that I think they're going to keep making those improvements. And I think season three could be pretty good. I think they've set themselves up to get rid of the baggage that comes with anybody who's going to be doing Star Trek, 50 years of canon. I think they've set themselves up in season three to have the show actually, you know, stand on its own and create a world that doesn't have to worry about the canon, because apparently in the next season, Discovery is going to be lost almost 1,000 years in the future from what we can tell. So yes, they're not going to have to worry about, you know, keeping the show looking like the original series or TNG, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, any of that stuff. So those types of complaints that people have, they're not going to be able to have those rely on those complaints in season three. So we can actually just look and see if the writing is good. If they're telling good stories, I think season three could be pretty great.
Well, I liked your approach to Star Trek Discovery season two. You said repeatedly on your YouTube channel, I want to like Star Trek. You know, mm-hmm. I don't want to...
Well, I do love Star Trek, but I would like to at least like Star Trek Discovery. At least 80-20. You know, 80% I'd like to at least like it. I don't have to love it. But right now it's more like 20-80, where it's I like about 20% of it, and I'm not a fan of 80% of it. I want to get that switched. And I think season three might be able to do that.
And a phrase a lot of people have used, and I've heard you use it, is space show discovery. If you don't think of it as Star Trek, if you just call it space show discovery, it's got some stuff that you can like. And if you're, you know, if it's not sort of spitting in your Trekkie face in the process, it's much easier to take.
Yeah, and it's the not spitting in your face part that's up to them to do, right? And now don't get me wrong. I tell everybody this. The show has a fan base, a loving fan base that loves the show. They love that type. They love the stories, or the story, and they love the way it's done. They love the feel. That's great for them, and I'm glad that they like it, because you should like what you like, no matter what other people like, right? Let people like what they want to like. It's not for me, but I'm still watching it, and I'm still like in the middle of season two. I just in my brain, I said, okay, I'm just going to stop worrying about the canon, the fact that this doesn't look or feel like Star Trek. Sometimes it sounds like Star Trek because they use the same little sound effects sometimes, which also can hurt, because then you're like, oh, I was forgetting that this was Star Trek. I'm trying to enjoy it. And then you just reminded me it's supposed to be Star Trek. But also, taking that aside, I just wasn't really loving the story, which is, for me, even more important. You know, no matter what it is, whether it's Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, The Expanse, whatever the show is, The Orville, whatever the show, for me, it's got to be about the story, the way it's done, the way it's laid out. It's not about the effects, which Discovery has amazing effects. It looks great. It's a very expensive show. It looks wonderful. It doesn't look bright and utopian at all, but it is very nice looking. When I think back to The Next Generation, it's one, you know, one of my favorite episodes or something like that. It's usually never going to be one that has big space battles. It's always going to be the personal stories.
Exactly. Although the notable exception for me is going to be The Best of Both Worlds Part 1.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I won't even spell that out. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you're listening to the wrong show.
Yeah.
I want to say this about Star Trek Discovery Season 2. I mean, one of the reasons why I can't think of the two shows, you know, think of Discovery without thinking of The Orville and vice versa, is that they both come on Thursday.
And I don't understand that. I would like to think because here's the thing. The Orville, they got their Thursday slot back in season one. A day and time doesn't matter with Discovery. It shouldn't matter because it's a streaming app. They can put that thing up any day they want. It's not going to matter, right? Because it's on an app. It's an internet show. It's not on live television. Why they decided to have it air the same exact time as the Orville confounds me. I don't understand it. Now, of course, you know, there is that side of me that's like, well, with CBS got some tricksies going on? Are they trying to, I don't know, be vindictive in some way? Because it's not going to work because more people have access to the live television. They have access to Fox. Only a few people actually have the CBS All Access app that they're paying for. Well, and then I was like, well, maybe they're doing it because it actually benefits them somehow. People get excited about the Orville, and then after they're done with the Orville, they go and watch Discovery. You know, they have a bigger chance of watching Discovery. So I like to think that they did it because it just benefits them in a positive way and that they weren't, you know, trying to, I don't know, do something bad to the Orville. I don't think they were doing that because I don't think they have the power to do that. Being that they're on an app that only some people have.
Well, I don't have cable TV. I don't even have a TV. I mean, my TV is my little 10-inch Amazon Fire tablet. That's where I watch everything. And
and of course, you can watch the Orville the very next day, the very next day on Hulu.
Well, I bought the entire second season of the Orville in advance, sight unseen.
Yeah, me too.
And then only discovered after the fact that that meant that I couldn't watch the episodes until Friday because they're not available on Amazon on Thursday. But Star Trek Discovery, you know, I got CBS All Access also through Amazon Prime Video, and that I can watch on Thursday night. So the pattern for me was get good and baked and watch Star Trek Discovery on Thursday night. And if I was so high that I couldn't remember what happened 2 minutes ago, just the rhythms and the feel and the vibe of Star Trek Discovery, I enjoy it. But, you know, if I'm not sufficiently incapacitated that I'm still examining things and calling out inconsistencies and whatnot, then that really wrecks my enjoyment.
Yeah, season one was like that for me as far as, like, examining it. Season two, I just stopped. I'm like, there is no point. there's no point in being overly critical, which is actually sad because when I was watching – you know, when I used to watch 90s Star Trek, well, let's be honest, I still watch it.
Oh, yeah.
When I watch those episodes, I'm examining everything, but it's all great. It's fun to examine things. Things are mostly lining up, and, you know, it's all taking place in the same world. You can tell that it's the next generation evolved 100 years from the original series, that Deep Space Nine evolved a couple of years later from the TNG era. You know, they're all the same era, but, you know, a couple years later. The big worry that people have is the new Picard series. They got Patrick Stewart coming back currently it's an unnamed show, but it's the Picard series on CBS All Access. It's coming up, I think, this fall, starring Patrick Stewart. It's going to be a 10-episode thing, basically a 10-hour movie. And the thing that people are worried about is that it's supposed to take place 20 years after the last time we saw Captain Picard, which is about right. That's almost how long it's been since we have seen Captain Picard, really. People are worried, and there are rumors that a lot of the stuff is being shot down by third-party merchandisers because it doesn't look like it came from the Next Generation world or era, I should say. It doesn't look like the world that they're existing in is 20 years later. It looks like it's just a whole different show. It looks like it's from Star Trek Discovery, which actually takes place like 100 years before, right? So hopefully they've actually made changes. I think the writing could definitely be good. We know the acting is going to be good. This is Sir Patrick Stewart we're talking about. He's not going to sign up for anything that doesn't have a good story and a good role for him. Hopefully, as long as it looks like it kind of evolved from the Next Generation era Star Trek, I think it could be an amazing show.
Well, let me flesh out what you've said just a bit. And I'm just, you know, repeating what I've learned from Midnight's Edge and Overlord DVD. Star Trek, the Picard series, was set to begin production last month. And the day came and the merchandisers, the third-party sellers of Star Trek merchandise, looked at the designs for the Picard show and said, absolutely not. We will not buy any of this stuff because we know that no Star Trek fans are going to buy any of this stuff because it doesn't look like Star Trek. So either make it look like Star Trek or, you know, go elsewhere. We're not interested. And so that halted, that prevented production from starting. Basically, CBS has to go back to the drawing board and redesign everything so it's recognizably Star Trek, or the people who sell the merchandise are just not on board with it. And that's,
because I mean, you will get people that want to buy it no matter what it is, because you're going to have fans of the show no matter how it looks, but it's not going to be enough people that want to buy it. But of course, even in their video, they said that part of it is at this point just rumor because they don't have concrete evidence as of yet, but I have no reason to believe it's not true. But the production did begin 1 week later.
Oh, it did.
They are, 1 week later after they missed their date, 1 week later. The show is right now in production, so maybe they figured it all out, assuming that there was something that they did need to figure out. And if so, if they made those improvements, I think it could be great. I think it could be great. I just don't know. We don't know. See, here's the thing is I'm no longer giving – usually when it comes to anything Star Trek, I give it the benefit of the doubt until I see it. I don't think at this point – CBS has earned the benefit of the doubt, but that doesn't mean that I'm not at least optimistic that it could possibly be exactly what we were looking for, exactly what we want. But I'm not going to, I'm not going to be a proponent of the show until I see it. Whereas before, I would just say, "Oh, Captain Picard's coming back. This is going to be the best thing ever." It's like with the Orville. People ask me, "What's your favorite episode of the Orville?" I'm like, "Oh, whatever the next episode's going to be, that's my favorite episode." So right now, my favorite episode is season 3, episode 1, which will hopefully won't air until, hopefully we'll at least get it by the very, very end of this year.
So we're halfway through the Star Trek discussion now, and we have not mentioned Christopher Pike as played by Anson Mount.
Oh, that was actually one of the shining jewels of season 2. He shows up right off the bat in season 1. Captain Pike, of course, being the, not the original, but the captain of the Enterprise. He was the captain of the Enterprise for over a decade before Captain Kirk arrived. He was the star of the original pilot, which actually didn't air originally in the 60s. It was years later before anybody got to see that. And, of course, they kind of used a lot of that footage from the pilot for the Menagerie two-parter, which was great. But Anson Mount, who... you might know him from the show Hell on Wheels. He's the star of that show. He comes on as Captain Pike, and right off the bat, I'm like, oh, my God. Instantly, I was like, this show kind of feels like Star Trek now. Because he comes over from the Enterprise. He looks kind of like a reimagined, updated version of the original series era. They make changes, but that's okay because there's nothing you can do. You can't make a show that looks exactly like the 60s version. This is 2019. Nor should you try. But it's got to look like it was inspired by that era, right? And it did. And he comes on. He's acting like a Star Trek captain. He wants to know people's names. He wants to know who people are. He's giving these great speeches. Of course, I don't think the show treated him well.
No.
As far as the character, because he's the captain. But every idea he has gets shut down. Like Michael Burnham. I'm like, wait a minute. That's not how it's supposed to be. But that aside, he was great, and there was a big movement to get him, his Enterprise, Anson Mount as Captain Pike, Ethan Peck as Spock, because Ethan Peck played Spock in season 2, Rebecca Romijn as number 1, to get them their own Star Trek series, which would be amazing. I think there might be some news on that front, but I don't know. I don't think there's... it's been officially announced if they're going to do a series or not, but the fans do want it. The fans seem to want a Captain Pike series starring Anson Mount more than they actually want a season 3 of Discovery.
I certainly do.
And more than, me too, though I am I ain't going to lie. I'm actually very into seeing season three of Discovery because I just like to watch the journey, to see how they improve, to see the changes they make. And I do like, you know, there's a lot of the characters that have grown on me over the last two seasons. Some of the characters that ungrew on me, one that I used to like, now I don't, and then that one that I used to not like, now I do.
Well, who are those? Put some names on those categories.
Well, I actually am cool with Michael Burnham now. I don't like her backstory at all. She's Spock's secret adopted sister, human sister. I'm like, what? They tried to explain that at the end. I'm like, no, you're just sweeping stuff under the rug as far as I'm concerned, but that's okay. I actually like Michael Burnham. I think the show treats her character in an unfortunate way. She's the star of the show, and I think that's really bad. Every storyline is from her point of view. It's all about her, and I'm like, no, Star Trek's got to be an ensemble cast. Let's have a story about another character once in a while, please. So I don't like that. I don't like well, let's not talk about all the stuff I don't like. You asked me the opposite of that. But I like Michael Burnham. Everybody loves Captain Pike. I love Saru now. Ever since Saru lost his ganglia, now he has all this confidence. I'm like, oh, Saru's. I love the new Saru.
Yeah, me too.
I hated Stamets the first couple episodes in season one, just because he was just so. Well, everybody was on the show. Everybody hated each other. Everybody was rude to each other. No conversation went on without a bunch of snark. Stamets was one of the worst when it came to that. But then a couple episodes in, they had some storyline where he got high or something. He was under the effects of something.
Or the mushrooms.
He got super groovy all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And that was funny. But then when he's no longer under the influence of whatever that was, he was just chilled out. He's a better character. I liked him. And I guess they're married. His husband, Dr. Culber, I love their dynamic, though I don't think it was delved into enough. Unfortunately. So I do like the character. I used to love Tilly, but in season two, she had a little story arc going on in season one. She's like kind of like the Lieutenant Reginald Barkley of the ship. Very awkward, socially awkward, talks too much, stammers, all this stuff. But in season two, they took away the story aspect of her character and just turned up the awkwardness up to 11.
And they kind of gave her Tourette's syndrome.
Basically. And I'm like, and it got to the point where I'm like, can't she just once come into a scene? Because, you know, her scenes are usually her coming in to give us information that we need, you know, give the captain information. Can't she just once come in, give us the information, and not stammer for 5 minutes? And so they went way overboard with her, which is really sad. Because Mary Wiseman, who plays the role, she's a great actress, very likable. Tilly is very likable. So hopefully they'll do the character more give her, you know, do justice next season and turn her down to a 5. Have her grow.
So here's my fantasy for the first episode of season 3 of Star Trek Discovery. We get the recap previously on Star Trek Discovery, and we see everything, mm-hmm. you know, the condensed version of the events that led up to the finale of season 2. And then we see Discovery go through the portal to the future. And then the point of view stays in the present with Captain Pike and Spock on the Enterprise. And, you know, somebody says, Captain, we have a distress call coming in. And boom, we're off onto the first adventure of the Captain Pike's, you know, adventures on the Enterprise before Kirk.
Well, if they might very well do that, but it'll be on Star Trek Pike. It'll be on his series. It'll be season 1, episode 1. But they'll connect it to Discovery, just like you just said. I think what's going to be great about season 3, episode 1, is they're going to be lost in this time that they're unfamiliar with. It's going to be a lot like Voyager, where they're often in the Delta Quadrant. All the aliens are different looking. They have no idea what's going on, and they are just lost, and they're all on their own. They have no backup. I'm very interested to see what's going on. Also, there was a lot of timey-wimey stuff in season 2, which also I was having a hard time keeping track of, which is not usually the case with timey-wimey stuff. I'm usually can figure out everything that's going on, but I thought the writing was so convoluted when it came to the time travel stuff in season 2. But the future that Michael Burnham's mother was living in 1,000 years in the future, it was a world where all sentient life has basically been destroyed, right? But we changed that timeline where they saved everybody. They saved everybody in their time frame, right? In Captain Pike's time frame. They saved the world or the universe, the galaxy, right? So are they going to be in the alternate timeline when we see them again, the one that's desolate, where all sentient life is, you know, lost, or maybe it's changed now, it's some other, there's, you know, races we've never heard of before going on. Are we going to meet up with Kraft from the, did you ever see the Star Trek Discovery, the short treks?
Oh, yeah.
That came out. Yeah, there was the I think it was the second one, Calypso, that took place 1,000 years in the future. And we have that one character, Kraft, that we met. Are we going to run into him at some point?
And the ship is deserted, and an AI runs it. And I'd be interested to learn how all that comes about. But really, I wish they were going 10,000 years into the future, not 1,000 years into the future, because that 1,000 years into the future is basically going to drop them right into the middle of the whole Star Trek Enterprise temporal Cold War storyline, because that's where the you know the future players were coming from, was about that time period. And
Maybe that's what their plan is.
But
also, I would love it if their plan is that they're in the future in an alternate timeline.
Yes.
Because they talk a lot about the different timelines in that second season because of all the time travel stuff going on. Because the Mother Burnham kept going back in time over, you know, like 1,000 times to make changes. So if she made all those changes, things are going to be messed up. She probably created a different timeline for every change that she made. So I think they're going to be going into the multiverse thing, just like Marvel is going to be going into the multiverse thing with the rest of their movies, it seems like.
We've got just about 5 minutes left, and I want to bring up a completely different topic, and that is Farscape. I'm in the midst of rewatching Farscape on Amazon Video, and I'm all the way up to the end. I'm ready to start the Peacekeeper Wars Part 2. And I loved that show when it was on, like, you know, 98 to 2003, something like that. And rewatching it, I love it even more. It is just, and I didn't realize until I started rewatching it that James Gunn's Guardian of the Galaxy is a complete ripoff of Farscape.
It has that same look, doesn't it? Now, Farscape, I remember Farscape. I watched a bunch of episodes of it, but I never watched the whole thing. I think it was one of those times where wasn't that on Sci-Fi? One of their first
there? It was a Jim Henson Production Company show that was shot in Australia. So all of these aliens that they're encountering all have Australian accents. It was very, very charming that way.
Yeah, I remember all that. I remember the Jim Henson side of it. I watched a bunch of episodes of it, but I don't think I had a steady cable subscription at that time. And I missed a bunch of it, and I never got caught back up. But, yeah, the look of it, I remember the look of it. I remember the feel of it. And, yeah, that is a very Guardians of the Galaxy type of feel. And also, Guardians of the Galaxy, I love, when it comes to the Marvel stuff, because I was getting tired of all the Marvel movies because there was just so many of them. Then Guardians of the Galaxy came out. I'm like, oh, I fell right back in love with the Marvel Universe, but the cosmic Marvel Universe, all the space stuff, which also they brought the Thor into, which I thought was amazing, with Thor Ragnarok. So I've been in love with that whole side of the Marvel Universe ever since Guardians of the Galaxy. And I guess we have Farscape to thank for that.
James Gunn admits these days that, yeah, he totally ripped off Farscape. Farscape's about this guy who, you know, he's a good-looking dude, and he's an astronaut, and he gets zipped across the galaxy, you know, to some unfamiliar place where he meets up with this ragtag, you know, collection of disparate alien personalities who are all prisoners on this ship, this living ship. And, you know, there's a woman there who is this badass warrior who turns out to be his love interest. So we've got, you know, Gamora in the form of Aaron Soong. And there is a warrior dude, you know, from a warrior race. This is Car Dargo, who is the, you know, the Batista character, Drax, the Destroyer.
Drax.
You know, you've got a short sort of wisecracking character in the name of, you know, in the form of Dominar Rigel. in Farscape, who is Rocket, the genetically engineered raccoon rabbit type thing in Guardians. There's so many parallels. And John Crichton, you know, the character, the main character in Farscape, is always throwing out these pop culture references that he knows nobody around him is going to get. And it doesn't slow him down. I mean, it's so many beats, so many pieces of, you know, the look and the structure of how the characters relate to each other. So much maps over onto Guardians of the Galaxy from Farscape. And it's really, it's been a lot of fun to go back and spend, you know, that four seasons with those characters again and really appreciate how much they contributed behind the scenes to the creative process. Like, did you ever see Jodorowsky's Dune, that documentary?
No, not the documentary. No.
Oh, well, a Chilean filmmaker, Alejandro Jodorowsky, tried to make Dune back in the 70s, and he got all these great people around him, and they were, you know, creating production art, and they were trying to get it together, and the funding never showed up, and basically it just dissolved, and those people went off and did other things. But so much of what they had been gestating for Dune showed up in Alien. You know, Dan O'Bannon was writing Dune, mm-hmm. and he ended up writing Alien, and he, you know, he brought in Mobius, and he brought in H.R. Giger, and so much of what would have been Dune turned out to be Alien. It's a very worthwhile documentary, worth your time.
Oh, I'll have to check it out. Now, we are getting a new Dune coming up.
Oh, Josh, yeah.
Brolin.
It looks great.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll follow Josh Brolin anywhere. Now, speaking of James Gunn is directing Suicide Squad Part 2,
yes.
which I think is going to be much better with James Gunn attached to it.
I think it's going
to
be a reboot. It's going
to come out in 2021.
Hey, JP, I hate to say it, but we are down to less than a minute at this point. So
I get it.
Where can folks find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on YouTube. That's the big spot. YouTube at egotasticfuntime.com. I know that's hard to spell. So you can just type in the Orville or talking to Orville. I will pop up somewhere.
You're listening to the Seagram podcast. Your mind, one week at a time.
Righty right. That was JP of Egotastic Fun Time. I always enjoy talking to JP. And, you know, we go long periods without talking, but I hear him on YouTube pretty much every single week. And speaking of YouTube, I have a YouTube channel. It is not as popular or, in all honesty, as good as JP's, but I do hope that you'll check it out from time to time. It's called Out of My Head, OUTTAMYHEAD, all one word, Out of My Head. Thematically, it's kind of all over the place, not nearly as directly targeted and focused as JP's work, but, you know, that's what you've come to expect with the Sea Realm, and if you are still listening to the Sea Realm podcast after however many years, you'll probably find something to like in my YouTube material as well. Again, do check it out. All right, and dispensing with the usual outro music, we're going to close with the music that JP uses at the end of each and every one of his YouTube videos. I can't get enough of it. I hope you like it, and I hope that you will join me for another installment of the Sea Realm podcast, well, whenever I put one up. Until that time, please, stay well.
Egotastic Fun Time, we're gonna have a great time. Egotastic Fun Time, give me all your money.
Give him all your money.
You will find it funny.
Just give me money.
I love money.
Give him all your 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 money.